Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the publication of the Q3 report 2021 of SFC Energy AG. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Dr. Peter Podesser, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Lucas. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome you to our nine-month results call, and thank you very much for taking the time. Together with my colleague, Daniel Saxena, we will lead you through the quarter three results as well as the nine-month results, and we'll be happy to take questions in the Q&A session afterwards. Let me look at the quarterly figures, but also the nine-month figures. I think we are happy to report a continuously high growth momentum in the third quarter here, seamlessly following a first half year with the same profile. I think especially on the operating profitability, we are sending strong signals and showing strong performance. At the end, in a broad picture, I think we have a good acceptance for our climate-friendly products, but we naturally benefit from the buildup of a broad customer base over the last 15+ years. Overall, in a summary, we are seeing a really positive environment for our business, for our products. But at the same time, we by no means are blind for the obvious risks posed by naturally the ongoing pandemic situation with the, I'd say, subsequent topic here in terms of supply chain risks, and we will address this during the call today. Overall, I think we are fully on track with our activities and the positive structure of the business in terms of a regionally broad and also a broad demand across our entire customer base, across different industries, across the end consumer markets, shows tremendous resilience. I think for a couple of years, we had to address here or there the question, why do we go into the markets in such a fragmented way? What we see right now is that this fragmentation, this former or perceived fragmentation turns into a strong resilience. At the same time, what we see is that initial starting markets and taking here surveillance and security applications in the industrial area, where a digitization process requires continuous and reliable decentralized power, there we see initial niche markets now becoming large and powerful markets where a first mover advantage of building out partnerships here regionally across the different continents starts to pay off. We now look at where we are on the 30th of September. We see the overall growth here on a broad footing and a large increase, a more than doubling of our backlog also gives us a strong and solid visibility into the year. Following all this and summarizing all this, we concretized our revenue forecast, and we lifted our earnings forecast as a logical consequence last week on November 10th. If we now see what happens on the macro side, I think we all have witnessed the summit in Glasgow in the last weeks. Whereas this does not give, let's say, an immediate impact on a business like ours, I think the overall trend is non-reversible. We have to combine a growing demand for energy as a generic development, the overall demand of energy also in all, let's say, long-term forecast is not going to be reduced. But at the same time, we have to combine it with the attitudes of making it a climate-friendly development, providing, preserving technologies that help combining a growing demand and still meeting climate targets. And I think what we can see now and what we can report, and to a certain extent, naturally, we are also really happy to see this. We are step by step making a measurable contribution here to this global race to net zero by replacing conventional technologies like diesel and internal combustion engine generators by our efficient and clean fuel cell technology, be it on methanol basis, be it on hydrogen basis. And I think a good example here and worthwhile to mention is a customer project that we recently also published with a customer in the US, a dedicated surveillance and security company ordering, as a matter of fact, also the biggest order here for EFOY fuel cells in the US for our company so far, ordering more than 600 EFOY fuel cells, 670 plus EFOYs in one order, combined with the previous order, almost 800 fuel cells. And I think that what is noticeable there, the time of decision making, the time span from testing to decision making and then really replacing the incumbent technology that is a general, a conventional generator was not even a year's time. So within, I'd say, 6 to 8 months, we could convert here the customer from conventional generator technology to EFOY fuel cells. And more so, without being able, neither our Canadian colleagues nor we ourselves from Europe here could go on site. So a very affirmative also fact, I think, for the future. And now with us being able to travel to the US, at least for the time being, we naturally expect a big impact, and it's a big focus for 2022 to make sure we have, let's say, we are starting to exploit the potential in this market. But at the end, what is the application? We are providing a clean energy source to surveillance cameras that are set out on parking lots of a large store chain here in the U.S., providing more safety, but also providing data to the owners of the stores there to see who is coming into their stores, when are people coming. So at the end, a digitization process. So we are combining green tech and IoT applications here. Stopping at this point in time and also looking at the risk factors, we keep a very diligent and watchful eye on risks being being clear and being evident here by naturally the ongoing and now let's say resurging pandemic here in Europe, but also elsewhere in the world, and also potential supply chain issues and bottlenecks associated with it. If we start with the first one, yeah, we have constant COVID measures in place. We are continuously testing on all locations. We have different levels of vaccination rates here from approximately 50% in Romania up to more than 95% in Holland. and a good 75% here in Germany, and we keep our routines in place with the testing, we keep the distancing in place, and naturally we are still making a wide use of mobile and home office working. Saying all of this, I think we are still cognizant of the fact that, that there is a residual risk, and this might lead to capacity constraints here in the company in the upcoming weeks and months, and therefore we also made it a cautious outlook here on the revenue side, in case we on the lower end of the revenue side in our current guidance. This is naturally also associated with supply chain risks. I think we covered ourselves pretty okay-ish over the last 20 months by simply doubling stock levels on core components, nearshoring, onshoring of supply chain partners. But also we had to see that some late or last minute changes in shipment dates for components made approximately $1 million to $1.5 million revenue shift out of the third quarter into the fourth and partially into next year. Overall, we see it, let's say, as $4 to $5 million risk span in terms of supply chain, and this is also the reason why we narrowed the guidance on the revenue side here on the lower end to the midpoint from $61 to $65 million. Of revenue, which we feel is a necessary and I think realistic measure. Besides this, the implementation of the overall strategy, regional rollout with strong partners, constantly ongoing. Just recently, we were able to publish an expansion of the partnership here with Schneider Electric in Eastern Canada, making use of our expertise here, combining their product offering for SCADA and measurement products with a clean and off-grid energy source with our EFOY fuel cells, and covering, let's say, the industrial heartland of Canada here out of Ontario, I think will give us good impetus also in the years going forward. And In a bridging time, also can serve as a hub for our business development in the eastern part of the U.S. The other regional projects are I'd say continuously evolving. We recently had the opportunity to be the first time on site in India, progressing the work there. And on the OEM strategy side, which is the second large initiative, I think we are seeing good traction here with partners like Jenoptik in traffic management and also digitization. Both for our midterm plan, instrumental initiatives to, let's say, reach the midterm targets that we have out there in the market on the revenue side for 2025, between 350 and 400 million euro of revenue. A few sentences on the structure and on the development of sales in the two segments, both segments growing. In the third quarter, a 33.4% growth, not only showing a rebound from COVID, but significant, I'd say, pickup in activity in some of the subsegments here of our product lines. And in the 9 months, an 18.5% growth year on year to 46.5 million revenue. The clean energy segment remains the larger of the two segments, increasing the share of total sales to 65.2% with a positive growth impact here in Q3, 41.5% growth compared to last year's Q3 numbers, and year on year, still 24% growth here in the 9 month period. Still, consumer demand significant and high, where we are ahead 42.4% compared to the previous year, but also, say, and naturally this part driven by a good environment, especially for RVs, but also in the marine market, as well as some interesting projects on tiny houses. Oil and gas customers contributing still positively to our development here in the segment, although the overall percentage on sales of EFOY fuel cells is now, I'd say one quarter of the overall fuel cell units sold in North America, means that diversification really shows traction. Still, we are ahead of our expectations. Two main drivers there. We see big pressure on replacement of carbon heavy alternatives, again generators in this respect, most of it natural gas generators being replaced by our fuel cells. And the other element, obvious, naturally, a strong and stable oil price as we are appreciating it now simply increases investment activity. If we now look into, another customer group here, security government customers, well, in the defense and security market, we have a catch-up game to last year. There was the biggest impact through, Corona-related factors with delay in different programs. We were able to finalize a program here with the Swiss defense authorities, with the Swiss Army, and overall year on year we are about 130% above last year, also in defense and security, and I think we are good for a 100% growth corridor year end compared to last year. Clean power management. Significant rebound after, a COVID-impacted last year's Q3. Overall, in the third quarter, 16.8% growth and still 9.1% growth in the nine-month period. And besides the catch-up element here, we also see new project activity coming back. This was something that was really impacted in this business, where people usually have a hesitation to go into new development of products, replacement of incumbent technology without, thorough and in this case also physical technical meetings. This activity is resuming, and here also for the year end, the outlook and the backlog is at the end, all orders in. It's a question what we can execute here on the supply chain. With this, the revenue side is concluded, and I'm handing over to Daniel to lead you through the earnings and financial perspective. Thank you.
Good morning, also from my side. Thanks for joining our call. And let me go into the gross profit and the gross margin of the group. For the first 9 months, we realized gross profit of 17.1 million euros, which is about 4.1 million euros higher than the previous year's 9 months. This is in line with the higher revenues. As Peter mentioned, we increased our revenues by 7.3%. Overall, this translates into an expansion of our gross margin to 37%, which is, a notable increase from 33% we had in the first 9 months, 2021. It is above the 2020 full year level, where the gross margin came to 34%. So the expansion of our gross margin in the first 9 months is basically a function of, first of all, relative lower personal expenses in the manufacturing production, And the second thing is relatively lower overhead expenses, which include rent expenses, as well as lower material expenses. And the latter partially affected by the product mix as well as the price stability for our product. We are, as always, working continuously on gradually increasing our gross margin. The key elements for that is really maintaining prices. Secondly, is optimizing the bill of material. And thirdly, you know, looking for opportunities where we can realize sensible growth, i.e., you know, maintaining pricing power and selling our product. However, as Peter mentioned, we are also facing to some extent challenges with regards to the procurement of certain components, which may to some extent impact our revenues in the short term. Overall, if you look at the gross margin on segment level, the gross margin for the segment clean energy reached 42%, which is about 3 percentage points higher from the last 9 months in the previous years. When it comes to the gross margin for clean power management, it's about 26% comparing to 24% in the 9 month 2020. Basically, in the segment clean energy, the increase is due to the product mix, as mentioned before. We believe the gross margin is healthy, however, always looking at expanding it. And when it comes to the gross margin development in clean power management, the higher margins are mostly due to the North American Canadian business that was heavily impacted last year by the pandemic-induced recession. EBITDA group reported EBITDA, we're looking at minus €640,000 compared to €790,000 in 2020. The reported EBITDA was again significantly impacted by non-recurring expenses, namely the provisions we have to make for the LTI program, the stock and ZAS, stock option and ZAS program, which amounted to €6.4 million in the last 9 months, comparing to €3 million in the previous years. Also in these numbers included transaction-related expenses of $300,000. The LTA program is valued using an option price model, and this expense is obviously a function of the share price, and they're non-cash until the maturity of the program. The reason why they're higher is just look at our share price. The share price as of end of September 2020 was at €14.60, and at the end of September this year, it was at €28. We are adjusting our EBITDA for those non-recurring expenses, also to have a comparable ratio, you know, apples with apples on a quarterly but also annual basis, and give you a more objective indicator of our financial performance. So we adjust our EBITDA for those non-cash, non-recurring expenses in total of €6.4 million. Then our adjusted EBITDA comes to €5.8 million, which then translates into a margin of 12.5%. That compares to €2.2 million in 2020 and a margin of 6%.
There seems to be an issue with the audio line right now. I will go to a quick break and check
the
details.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, thank you.
So,
can you hear us properly now?
Yeah, you're presented in the call.
Okay, well, sorry for the inconvenience. I have to say it's the first time in quite a number of years that we get disconnected here during the earnings call, but we will resume where we thought the line break up.
Thank you. I wasn't aware that my presentation is so dull that you hung up, but let me continue on that. So I was just going through the adjusted EBITDA, and the margin of the adjusted EBITDA was 12.5%. As I mentioned, the increase in the margin from 6% in the last year is a function of the higher gross margin that we were able to realize. Secondly, we had relatively to the revenue development lower functional costs, adjusted functional costs, and also there's a portion of higher other operating income included, which leads to that margin expansion. If then we look at the depreciation amortization to get to EBIT, the total depreciation amortization amounted to 3.1 billion euro. The major part is IFRS 16 related, so approximately 46%. The second largest part is R&D related, so depreciation of the capitalized R&D expenses, which is 35% of the total D&A. So over and 500K higher than in the previous years, which is really due to the start of the depreciation of a new product generation that we rolled out in September 2020. The rest of the depreciation is mostly PP&E and other. That leads us to a group adjusted EBIT of 2.7 million euros, translating into EBIT group adjusted EBIT margin of 5.8%. Compared to -433,000 euros in 2020 and a negative margin of 1.1%. We quickly dive into the operating expenses and the functional costs. We're looking at sales and marketing expenses. The total sales and marketing expenses at first glance were much higher than in the previous years, 11.4 million euros compared to 8.9 million euros. However, as also mentioned before, in these expenses, there are about 3.8 million euros of LTI / stock option programs expenses included, comparing to 1.7 million in the previous years. If we adjust the sales and marketing expenses for those non-recurring expenses, we are looking at a 6% increase compared to the previous year's period. And total marketing adjusted marketing expenses amounted to 7.6 million euros compared to 7.2 million euros in the previous years. This is corresponds to about 16% of our revenues compared to 80% of revenues in the first 9 months of last year and 90% for the full of the last year. We still stay to a medium range of sales and marketing costs, looking at 12 to 30% of our revenues as revenues are increasing. The increase in sales and marketing are mostly due to higher personal expenses, which are due to lower wage support payments, which we received in the Netherlands and in Canada last year in context with the pandemic, but also higher sales bonuses as our revenues are increasing. Also, travel and fare expenses are picking up slowly, not yet at the level of pre-pandemic times, but they are going up. R&D expenses, we're looking at the R&D cost expense in our balance sheet in a P&L. There were about 4 million euros compared to 4.7 million euros in last year. That's a 15% decline. We capitalized 1.8 million euros of R&D expenses versus 2.6 million in the previous year. And our total R&D cost, which is made of the R&D which we expend the P&L, plus the R&D capitalized, plus joint development expenses, and we're taking away minus the LTI or non-recurring expenses, amounted to about 7% lower than in the previous year. A bit of the reason why they're a bit lower is while we had really high cost last year with the introduction of our newer product generation, the EFOI 3.0, where we had a lot of software and programming services purchased. Overall, total R&D costs are 8.6% of revenue, a bit lower than the 12% we had in the previous year, and we're looking at 6 to 7% of revenues in the long term. R&D costs are driven by the projects we are doing, new product generations, hydrogen fuel cell, but also the power platforms in our segment, clean power management. G&A expenses, total G&A expenses unadjusted amounted to 8 million euros compared to 4.5 million euros in the previous year. LTA program expenses and acquisition-related expenses included in that number is 2.9 million euros compared to 1.3 million euros in the previous years. If we adjust the G&A expenses for these non-recurring expenses, we're looking at 26% increase compared to the previous years and total adjusted G&A expenses of 4 million euros compared to, 5 million euros compared to 4 million euros in the previous years. This is about 11% of our revenues compared to the 10% we had last year and also 10% we had for the full year 2020. The increase is mostly due to personal expenses, once again, less wage support payments than in the previous year, also higher bonus provisions that we made, and then also higher legal advisory expenses as a regulatory environment is increasing. And last but not least, we also had higher IT-related expenses. Quick look at our balance sheet. As always, let me reiterate that we are an asset-light company. Most of the CapEx you will see in our cash flow statement is related to capitalized R&D expenses, and right-of-use IFRS 16 related. The total CapEx, intangible assets, and PP&E was 2.6 million euros versus 3.6 in the previous year. Thereof, intangible assets, 2 million in CapEx compared to 2.8 in the previous years, which is mostly induced by the lower capitalized R&D expenses of 800,000 euros. The CapEx in PP&E was about 610,000 euros versus 818,000 euros in the last year. This is mostly due to lower IFRS 16 activation as a result of more favorable rental agreements that we were able to close at the end of last year. Our cash freely available amounted to 25 million euros compared to 31 million euros at the year end. We had a significant decrease in our financial debt, which was 1.9 million euros compared to 4.5 million in the at the end of the last year. This is all mostly short-term debt. In large, these are working capital lines, which we have with SFC Netherlands and SFC Canada. So that together translates into a net debt, or in this case, a net cash position of 23.3 million euros. The equity ratio is 60% versus 64% at the year end. And a quick look at our cash flow. Our cash flow before change of net working capital amounted to 5.1 million euros compared to 2.3 million in the previous years. Our net working capital has increased by 4.7 million euros. If we look at it, it's inventory that increased cash impacting about 800,000 euros. We had a significant increase in accounts receivable, which increased by 2.9 million euro cash impacting, mostly due with deliveries going towards the quarter end. But at the same time, we also had an increase in accounts payable with a positive cash effect of 1.4 million euros. So after taxes, this results in a cash flow from operating activities of about 400,000 euros. Then we have the cash flow in investing activities, CapEx, as mentioned before, it was 2.4 million euros. And then we have cash flow from financing activities amounting to 4.3 million euros negative. Thereof, it's 2.8 million of financial debt that we reduced, and 1.3 million is really IFRS 16 related expenses. Adding this all up translates into a change in cash of negative 6.3 million euros for the first 9 months of this year. With this, I'll turn it back to Peter Podesa.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel. I think in order also to catch up here for the break we had, I'll make it brief here on the guidance. I mentioned this already as a consequence of the first 9 months performance, as well as the order backlog, as well as the momentum, but also the risks we are seeing. We did change our guidance. We concretized cautiously on the revenue side, which reflects our assessment of the market environment here for the upcoming weeks, so that we narrow it from 61 to 65 million, but at the same time we are confident on the earnings side to, I'd say, surpass previous target ratios, and on the EBITDA underlying a range from 5.7 to 7.3 million seems realistic and achievable from today's point of view, as well as a range for the EBIT underlying from 1.6 to 3.1 million. Saying all of this, we have, let's say, 6-7 weeks ahead of us. If you ask us what are the challenges right now, well, obviously we have to further manage the COVID situation and potential negative impact here on the operation, the supply chain and the supply of components is a major activity since early summertime, putting task force together, supporting core suppliers here with teams of what we call parts hunters. Also there, we have, I think, a corridor defined that looks very realistic to us, and we feel comfortable with what we have. But going forward into the next year, if you ask me what is really now, apart from all the mentioned initiatives here on the revenue side with OEM strategy, regional rollout, our activities here in India with Toyota in Asia, and I'd say a reinforced focus on the US, what are the challenges? Yeah, it is growth, it's managing growth. We have to on the supply chain be as attentive as we have been. What we do physically is at the end not only ordering core components now for the next 9 months, yeah, we are purchasing it, we are preparing more space here in the vicinity for stocking. This sounds maybe a little old-fashioned, maybe not optimized from a working capital management side, but we feel it's the right risk mitigation, and we are in the midst of execution, and at the same time we have started a program to double the output here out of our Brunnthal facility here by mid of next year. It's mirroring the current setup in the same building, which is still doable, but with this, naturally, we will transfer some of our stocks to, as mentioned, to other locations. And, well, one of the key tasks and core areas of focus is naturally finding the right people, adding members to our team. On the 30th of September, we had 296 people employed. We are right now good beyond 300, and we are hiring on all locations with a core focus here in Germany on fuel cells, but naturally also in our regional activity, in our regional locations we are hiring. So a good 10% minimum addition to the workforce. So Those are the key elements, but we still feel that we are fortunate here with a positive business and macro environment, and therefore not only the revision and the lifting of the earnings forecast, I think, is important, but at the same time also our conviction that we are laying the right foundation and we are on a good track to deliver on our midterm plan that remains fully intact and unchanged. And with this, we would like to conclude at this point and ask Lukas to open the floor for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is coming from Carsten von Blumenthal at First Berlin Equity Research. The line is now open.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Daniel. So my first question is regarding your stocking and the supply chain. Do you have a feeling how long this will reach into 2022?
Yeah, good morning, Carsten. This is Peter. Well, I would say at least a good 9 months. So initially, I think the assessment was more so until mid of next year. But what we are doing right now is really we go up to September with our purchasing activities.
Okay, so that is a pretty cautionary strategy, which saves you your potential supply of fuel cells. Second question is regarding your gross margins in the segments in the third quarter. On the one hand, I see a very strong gross margin in the clean energy business in Q3, roughly 46%. Is that because there is more defense business in it, or can we adjust all in all to gross margins in the sector above 40%? Is that realistic? And secondly, the clean power management in Q3, that was a rather low gross margin, roughly 20%, that was below other quarters. Is there a particular reason for this? Perhaps you could go into detail a bit more there.
Thank you, Carsten. So if we look at the gross margin on a quarterly level, these highly depend really on the product mix in each quarter and also on the delivery of really larger orders. In both segments, you know, you tend to have industrial customers who then really order in larger numbers. So yes, if you look at the quarter three, if you look at clean energy, we do have some attractive aspects carrying over also from the defense business. That's correct. If you look at the gross margin from clean power management, it's largely product mix that we're looking at. So it's not a trend. It's really on a quarterly basis. As I mentioned, I'm induced highly by the product mix in the quarter.
All right. Thank you very much for taking my questions.
The next question has come from Anne-Margaret Crow at Edison. Your line is now open.
Good morning. And first of all, I'd like to apologize to Daniel for interrupting what he was saying. I got cut off. And I was so keen to listen to the rest of what he had to say, I didn't realize it would be disturbing him. My questions are relating to the technology, because the report and accounts that was published this morning talks about a focus for the period being the increase of the power of platforms from 4 kilowatts to 5 kilowatts. And my question is, how different is the technology required to increase power by that level?
And Margaret, this is Peter. Thank you very much for your question and also for your considerateness. On the technology side, this is a specific program here for our power conversion products, where at the end it's about what levels per form factor, and it's at the end the program that you can drill down to the point where you say more watt per cubic inch or cubic centimeter here in a power conversion product. And here, in this specific one, it is an increase naturally of let's say 25% overall power capacity, which is on the same technology platform, but again with a shrinked form factor, different cooling in it. So overall, it's not a major shift. Well, it's no shift in the technology. It's just, let's say, compressing it again.
Right. That's not trivial. Quite a tricky thing to do.
Yeah, and it's most of it is then, let's say, long-term impact, especially also the overall temperature management here is definitely the challenging part.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question is coming from Malte Schaumann at Warburg Research. Your line is now open.
Good morning. My first question is on the U.S. market. I mean, I think the gain of Live U.S., the customer, the follow-up order, that was a major positive during the quarter. You can elaborate on, I mean, how many of such customers you already see in the pipeline, and are these customers developing at a similar speed like you pointed out towards LiveView? And then secondly, the opening of the new hub in Eastern Canada, how does, maybe can elaborate on the planned rollout, further rollout or addressment of the Northern U.S. market from your side?
Good morning, Malte, Peter. Well, I think if you look at the U.S. market, at the end, what we have been doing is continuing a program that we had in place early in 2020 with the limitation of not being able to travel neither from Canada nor from Europe here to the U.S. So as much as possible, I think the business development has been ongoing over 20 months now. There are, I'd say, on a regional level, similar accounts in the pipeline, which we now need to simply support, firm up. And over time, also no secret, one of the key long-term plans is naturally re-establish presence in the U.S., either through, let's say, a greenfield exercise or a suitable acquisition here, which at the end is on the agenda for 22 and 23, depending also on let's say, the opportunistic situation. So I think that what really gives me a lot of confidence here, and so I think, well, and I'm just translating the confidence of our sales teams here, is that decision making has taken far less time than we are used to here in a European or also Asian context. I would say a similar project would have taken 3 years in a German context here, with selling one fuel cell 1 year, doing a winter long testing, then selling half a dozen, and then doing another year of testing, and then hopefully you're meeting the budget cycle of the customer, and in the third year you get, let's say, maybe up to 100. And here at the end, after a six-month period, the decision was taken to replace the incumbent generator going forward, full stop. And I think that's also where my experience tells me in the U.S. we have a much greater momentum here ahead of us. And finally, I think also the change in administration and putting green technologies here again on the political agenda here with a significant also financial support and incentive program should accelerate here. And on Canada, yeah, a pretty conventional step. I think it was good for us to simply, I'd say, see our expansion plans I would say, coinciding with Schneider asking us whether we would be willing and able to carry their products that we are selling also in a cross-selling exercise already in Western Canada, in this Eastern Canadian market. We are starting very, I would say, conventional here, opening up an office and a service location with a couple of heads in it on the sales front and on the sales support and service front, and there is an existing business of Schneider out there which we will gladly integrate and then simply basically finance our business development through this. And the logic to the U.S. is simply it is then easier to cover the eastern part of the U.S. out of Toronto, which is an hour flight or 2 hours flight to some of the core regions we have defined. And then still, this does not replace our endeavor and our plan to reestablish ourselves in the U.S., but it will definitely help us now in this bridging period here in 22.
Right. So medium term, it obviously will be kind of, as I said, greenfield operations or development of greenfield operations or acquisition or corporations.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on where do you see most activities in the pipeline from an application perspective? Is it in the U.S. also the coming from oil and gas? Is it rather security, surveillance?
And well, exactly what you mentioned is this, let's say, this digitization here of the surveillance market is one big driver. Wind is upcoming, and on the hydrogen side, definitely now initial projects here on telecom and telecom backup. Not translating into orders yet, but the RFIs and RFQs are in for a significant, I'd say, replacement exercise here again of conventional generators. So we would expect the telecom side to pick up faster in North America than here in Germany, because also you have a different level of stability in the grid. And therefore, there's higher pressure to do this. Overall, I think what we have to see is to whether we are happy with the regional representation in the country. This is an exercise which is ongoing right now, and where we are continuously looking for further also regional partnerships in North America.
Mm-hmm. Would have been my next question regarding hydrogen backup power. What are the major hurdles for quicker or accelerated market adoption? Is it customer access, as you just pointed out, with regional presence? Is it customer decision taking? So what are the major things that have to be solved?
Yeah, I think we will definitely see some, let's say, necessary adoption period. And again, we expect this to take a little longer in continental Europe than for example in North America. It is, I'd say, the qualification of the product itself. We are working as we speak on UL and CSA certification of our E4 hydrogen platform. And I think what is a fortunate situation and what helps us here in our own planning is, say, this BOSNET radio program here in Germany for the first responder and police communication that has been ongoing already in some of the provinces, and where Bavaria just issued a new tender that is due for submittance still this year, and I think we would expect a decision somewhere in Q1 of next year that will help us there to get market penetration, to get, let's say, a reference market installed here in our vicinity as a reference market for telecom applications worldwide.
Yep, good. Then with respect to R&D, Daniel pointed out that R&D is a bit lower this year compared to last year. Will that pick up next year again? I mean, probably some developments are upcoming at the hydrogen side. What are your expectations regarding R&D costs?
Yeah, Malte, as I mentioned, the main reason why R&D expenses are lower this year than last year is that we really had a lot of software development, where we had service that we purchased in the last year. So from let's say the internal cost of R&D, not much has really changed in this year, and we don't expect any significant changes also in the next year. So R&D will remain at the level and most likely increase in the next year.
Okay, good. Then on gross margin, I mean, that had been develop quite positively this year. I mean, is that the level you also expect, still expect to achieve in the future, upcoming quarters, and then specifically for Q4? If I look at your guidance, it seems to be the case that it still includes a certain level of caution, so kind of implies a decreasing gross margin in the fourth quarter. Is that what you're seeing based on the product mix and based on potentially higher sourcing costs for component in light of component shortages, or is that just a certain level of caution incorporated there?
Well, if I may answer this one here, I think overall, I think that although we have some, as Daniel mentioned, also answering Kirsten's question before, naturally there are some mixed effects also quarter on quarter, but the overall range we are now in there, I think, is also what we would expect here going forward for the year to come. And if we now look into Q4, yes, you're absolutely right. We are cautious here. One is just cautious out of the two major risks we are seeing: a COVID-driven disruption of the manufacturing here will naturally lead to, I'd say, some lower shipments and still some delays in incoming components would have the same effect. So top line definitely is the key driver, not so much a significant change on the mix side. And then naturally the cost, you mentioned this, we have to take some immediate action on some of the component availabilities where you simply accept higher cost, and this is also factored in. That's why the lower end of the guidance is where it is in terms of cautiousness. It's, I think, reflecting what we are experiencing here. Without saying that we expect this to happen, but I think we want to be prepared here.
Yep, makes sense. That's all for the moment. Thanks.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have a question for our speakers, please press 01 now to enter the queue. There's one more question coming in from Fabrice Stefano. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, Peter and Daniel. Good morning to all. I had a question notably on, first, the order intake. So we see, obviously, a very sharp acceleration. It seems to be in line with what you were anticipating. Could you remind us, generally, the delivery schedule is around one quarter, I remember well. And is it the kind of acceleration you expect to see in the course of 2022? Thank you.
Well, good morning. Peter here. I think if we look into the order intake overall and despite, let's say, strong shipments and increase or significant increase of backlog, and there is, I think, a dynamic across the regions, across the end users. So overall, the dynamic is fortunately not depending on one region, on one industry, or of one customer, as we had this in some of our early years. So therefore, factoring in naturally, again now, a more severe impact of COVID maybe for a foreseeable time frame, our optimism here is pretty high to see, let's say, a similar dynamic here. And if we look into our project pipeline, yeah, this is really, really high activity. So we don't foresee right now a disruption or immediate negative trend here.
Okay, thank you. And I had also a question on the M&A front. I mean, I remember, Peter, you were expecting M&A to bring to have a significant impact, mainly in 2024. So I guess you are not in a hurry. But are you seeing interesting options on this front?
You're right. We might not be in a hurry, but still, despite this, we are consistently working on it. And the one part is really the rollout of our regional partnerships, be it now in a format of a joint venture, for example, what is envisioned in India, as well as for other parts of Asia. As said, we were on site just a couple of weeks ago after the country opened up the borders. So our Indian partners are over here before Christmas. So this is really on the agenda as we speak. And on the direct, strict M&A side, we already touched upon our plans and our activities in the U.S. We expect this to take a little longer because we also want to be really cautious there and maybe start with Greenfield, supported out of Canada, etc. But then at the same time, we are assessing also still, let's say, complementary technologies here and what you would call maybe some orphaned assets on the fuel cell side, where with our competencies we can usually revive such product concepts pretty quickly and integrate it into our offering. So this is high up on the agenda for 22 and 23 because it will need to make a significant contribution to our midterm plan. So no immediate hurry, but consistent work on it and high focus.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
There are no more questions for the moment. For closing regards, I give back to the speakers.
Well, with this, we thank you very much for your time and attention. And as always, do not hesitate to reach out to Daniel, Susan, or myself for individual and bilateral conversations. We're wishing you a good day and a successful week, and stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.